we had huge weather, like bordering on storm style weather, massive 30, 40 foot waves, breaking waves, surf 40 foot, and you're sat on the waterline in these boats, 24 foot long.
Never in the field of human conflict.
How do you measure such an astonishing moment in history?
Hello, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Big Quest podcast. In a high-stakes, unpredictable world, every day is ripe with blue ocean adventures just waiting to be discovered. You need the mindset, the methods, and the motivation to lead with confidence into the unknown. Come along with me as we talk to today's leaders known for simplifying challenges, outsmarting variables, and inspiring greatness.
Hello, Mike, and first, congratulations on what an amazing journey and accomplishment you've done. So it's great to have you back.
It's great to be alive, Andy. We said we'd do this again, right, when we spoke before.
Yeah.
In the build-up, we're here, and that's amazing to me. So thank you for sharing the story.
Well, yeah, 2 years ago, what a great conversation we had. And at that time, you were, you know, starting the planning process. You were right in the middle of training and, you know, putting pieces together, hadn't even gotten the boat yet. There were so many things going on. But I guess my first big question is, when you look back at that moment from where you sit today and what you've experienced, and you could go whisper in your ear back 2 years ago to that same moment, what would you tell yourself that you wish you could have told yourself in terms of, did it turn out as you expected? Did you over-prepare, under-prepare? Was there anything you could tell yourself that would be really, now that you've gone through this and see the world a little differently?
That's a great question. That's a big question to start with. Do you know what? I'm going to give you an answer to that. I don't want to come across as arrogant, but I would whisper into my ear and say, keep doing what you're doing and don't change anything. Because, you know, I think when I reflect on the row, one, you can't over-prepare for anything. I don't believe you can over-prepare. I think preparation's key. Well, I'm sure we'll unpick that, because that was the difference, I think, between, you know, me coming in as the fastest British person ever to do that race and the three soloists who are still out there right now, who set off before me, actually, which is a bizarre.
You've
got to
be, well, hold on a second. Let me just get that right. There's still people in the race. You've been back now for how long? 2 weeks, almost?
No, more. 27th of January. So I want to say 5 weeks back on land. But there's still six soloists started. The Tyska was getting on to challenge. Three are still out there. So, and, you know, my honest view on that, Andy, is it's about preparation, man. So I think going back to the question, if I could whisper in my ear, I'd say, have no regrets.
Yep.
Do what you're doing, believe in yourself, and, you know, the rest of it will just happen. Because you can't control anything out there, man. That was something I learned very quickly. You're not in charge of the ocean. Mother Nature's in charge.
Well, we'll get into that, into the journey, because I was really curious on your run up to that before you actually, you know, day one out there on the ocean. But some people think when you say prepare, and you did prepare. I mean, I followed you through Instagram. It was crazy, the work you were doing. But like any type of big quest that you're on, it did have constraints. You didn't just 100% prepare. I mean, you were starting a business at the same time, you know, being a father and a husband and all those things that go with that. So you did live within some set of constraints, right, that had to really focus how you prepared and how much time you had to prepare.
Yeah, I mean, that made it all the more challenging, didn't it? Because, you know, if you self-fund something like this, that's the big thing here. This is a 3.5 year campaign. This, you know, I'm grateful to people like you, Andy, who stepped in early and supported it. Without those people, but this was the magical thing, right?
Yeah.
So without those people, this thing wouldn't have happened. It would have been so much easier to self-fund it, buy a boat, just train, take 2 years off work, as some people do, right? Like, they have to do it. But for me, the actual success of this row isn't the row itself. It's about the people who've come along for the journey. It's the impact it's had on the hospital and the amount of money we've raised, which is just staggering. And it's the thousands of people around the world who've been inspired by it, right?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, we live within these constraints, but I honestly believe you can do whatever you want to do in life. You've just got to be prepared to believe in yourself, and you've got to put the work in. Like, if you do both those things, there really are no constraints, like right. only your own imagination.
Well, that's what I was trying to, I guess, get at, is that a lot of people hold themselves back because of the constraints, you know. Oh, I have to quit my job. I have to do this. I don't have enough money. But it's actually the constraints that drive out the creativity, the collaboration, the, you know, allows you to be humble and lean on others, that it's outside your control.
100%. I mean, I left a 20-year career serving in the military and the Ministry of Defense to do this. Unfortunately, they didn't support my plans to do it, so I left. Yeah. But I also believe that you've got to take risks in life sometimes. You've got to back yourself.
Yeah.
The worst thing I believe would be to look back from, let's say, the end of life and have regrets, because yeah. it's too late to change it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I often look forward a little bit when I'm trying to consider these goals. I look forward and I think, how am I going to feel in my 80s, 90s yeah. if I don't take this decision? I don't want any regrets, man. So I'm yeah. prepared to take the risk.
Yeah. Well, I use this quote a lot from Henry Thoreau. This, most men live lives of quiet desperation and go to their graves with the music still inside them. And that's what that, you know, when you say, I don't want to be that guy to look back and still have the music that's been unplayed. And so, you know, congrats on you and learning how to get the music out now than standing back. You know, that first day out on the ocean when you realize you've crossed the Rubicon, you are now, you know, it's one thing to commit and prepare. I mean, mentally, what was that like, that first day when there was really no turning back?
Well, I mean, I was the last person to leave the marina, so they needed someone who was prepared to go last. I was so sure of my preparation that I was happy to be that person. No one wanted to do it because it's a lonely place.
Yeah.
And you sign paperwork, actually, with Atlantic Campaigns that says, unless your life's in imminent danger, you won't be rescued. So you know, once you step on that boat, and there's an image of me on Instagram, actually, that almost the second before I get on, this kind of like 1,000-yard stare, the realization of what I'm about to do. And I equate it to, and we'll get into this as well, like yeah. the challenges, but I was locking myself into a nautical solitary confinement
yeah.
for an unknown period of time.
Yeah,
that is tough to do, and yeah. it takes real strength. But the preparation gives you that confidence. Yeah. I think had I not prepared the way I did, there's no way I could have stepped onto that boat full of confidence. And I did. I got on there confident. But it was very difficult, mate. Very, very yeah. difficult. It's not a normal environment for humans to exist, the ocean. Mm. And it's absolutely not normal to do it on your own.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we'll get into the mental bits of it. I guess one of the things I knew you were trying to communicate through all the postings, which your team did a great job keeping everybody up to date, but I kept seeing these words and described of like, look, these waves don't look like this in reality. In reality, it's far different than what you're seeing. And, you know, express that a little bit of the difference there between what you would see on a video versus what you actually experience.
Yeah, you can't really articulate it because the scale of the ocean, it's most furious. And we had, and this is interesting, they'd indexed the race before we went and started and said it was going to be a slow year. They were predicting solo rowers to take between 60 and 70 days. And then 2 weeks in, the week between Christmas and New Year, we had huge weather, like bordering on storm-style weather, massive 30, 40-foot waves, breaking waves, surf, 40-foot. And you're sat on the waterline in these boats, 24-foot long, and you're climbing up these waves. It's like a vertical climb.
Yeah.
And then you surf up to, I think I got about 15 knots out of one wave, which is massively fast.
Wow.
And it's scary, man. It's scary. I mean, scary to do it with someone or a team, but on your own, like,
yeah,
it was scary. And it's hard to describe the scale of it. It was just ridiculous.
Well, I've got a 24-foot pontoon boat, and just even going out in the Gulf, when you get into 4-foot swells, you don't want to be there. And I can't even imagine a 24-foot rowboat with, you know, 10-foot swells, 20-foot swells.
Oh, way bigger, way bigger. I mean, the sea state itself was never less than 2 meters, so okay. 6, 7, 8 foot. But yeah. on top of that, you're well, so that's the sea state. That's the waves. Yeah. And then you add the swell. We had huge weather systems to the north pushing a lot of cross swell. And that was the other bad thing about this year, or the tough thing. Most of it was coming from the side. You know, we had a team of Americans who capsized, couldn't ride the boat, had to get rescued, shipped off to Canada. We had two snapped rudders, carbon rudders, snaps through capsizes. I got knocked down three times, like a partial capsize. It was brutal, man. And going back to one of my first points there, I think at that point you have to accept you are not in control.
Yeah.
And all you can do is your very best. You have to cross your fingers. And that's it. That's life, man. You know, you're not really in control of this. You think you are. Just do your best every day and then cross your fingers.
Was there ever a moment where you thought, my life could be in jeopardy?
Yeah. A lot of times. A lot of times. Yeah. You have an absolute sense. And, you know, when, I'm sure when people listen to this, and I'm mindful when I'm talking about this stuff, that people might think, oh, he's exaggerating, or, you know, it's not.
No.
I'm not in that business of exaggeration. You know me. I'm an honest guy. And you absolutely are aware of your own mortality when you are at night in the pitch black. You know, I remember putting some reflective Solas tape around the spoon of the oar, which is about maybe 6 foot away from the handle, right? I said to my ocean coach, why am I putting it there? He said, you won't be able to see the end of the oar. That's how dark it is. Literally.
Pitch black.
When the moon disappears, it's pitch black. When the moon comes out, it's like someone's put the house lights on. And it's amazing.
And but you're rowing in a ferocious storm, pitch black. I think that is, I don't even have words to describe what that would feel like, you know, this leaves me speechless in terms of trying to imagine that. I think I want to move off of that, or I'm going to sit here and just be like in terror.
it's a terrifying thing. And sorry, just to pause on that real quick. Yeah. Like, I honestly think, and a few people have said this to me, there must be some trauma associated with it because, for one, I remember, and I didn't realize it until someone said this recently, but when we experience trauma, we tend to disassociate to what's happening. You hear this, people have been abused or they kind of see it happening to themselves. Well, for a lot of the row, I remember thinking, it's almost like I'm watching myself do it.
Yeah.
And that, I think, was me experiencing some level of trauma with what I was experiencing. And I remember looking down on myself, watching myself row this ocean, thinking, man, I can't believe you're doing this.
Yeah.
So it absolutely is traumatic. And we need to recognize that and accept it. And it's going to take a long time to get over it.
Yeah, the process, all of that, and I'm sure that over time this is still going to come back and you know, relive some of those moments. You're a guy that it's very decisive in what you do. You choose a goal and you go for it, and you're really clear about it and you stick to it. But on this journey, you started with an outcome to win the race, and you're really clear about that outcome. You wanted to win the race as a desired outcome, but something happened and you changed. You changed that desired goal, that outcome you were after, to something else, which I thought was highly unusual. I took quite note of that for you, because you're a guy that just, you know, bulldog, this is what I'm going to do. What happened? Take me to that moment when you decided to change the outcome and what you wanted that outcome to be.
So I set off, I didn't tell a lot of people. I told you, but I didn't tell a lot of people that I wanted to win the race. Like, but people who know me, like you know me, know that that's the guy I am. So they know.
Yeah.
And I'd set off with the idea that I was just going to try and beat everybody. And of course, you know, that's just my ego, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a huge crash on day 6. There was 3 really dark days I had. Day 6, day 17, day 38. Emotional, horrible days. And I only saw wildlife twice. And I saw dolphins twice, and on 2 of those 3 days, at my darkest hour, and I'm not a spiritual man, I'm not a religious man, but I'm absolutely a man of faith now because of this, something happened and dolphins appeared. And it's only when you've experienced that connection between yourself and someone else, or yourself and wildlife, you get a different sense of the world. And it was all like, when they swam off, I said it's almost like they took my ego with them. And I was like, it was a realization that you're not here to race anyone. You're here to do your best, and you're here to race yourself. And so then it didn't stop being about high performance. It didn't stop being about me doing the very best I could. And the result of that could have been winning the race. It became about me. And I think that's the lesson for everybody out there. Far too often we compare ourselves to other people. We want what other people have got. You should be racing yourself each and every day, because that's a game you can't lose.
Right.
And the other games we're playing, the status game, the corporate game, mating game, they're all games you're going to lose. You can't win those games.
No.
But when you're fighting against yourself, you're competing against yourself, that's a game you can't lose, man.
Yeah. I love how you put that. And you had some other lessons. One of the things I've been tracking with you is the lessons learned on the ocean. Take us through that. That was one. I think there was four or five that came through that. Just for our audience, take us through those lessons and, you know, what brought those lessons on, if you can.
I mean, the big one, I think the one to talk about really is that human connection's everything.
Yeah.
You know, as a solo rower, I mean, I made the point there, it's a bit like going into nautical solitary confinement, but if you're in nautical solitary confinement, if you're in solitary confinement in prison, you'd at least be fed three times a day by a guard. You'd see someone.
Right.
On the ocean, you don't see anybody. I didn't see anybody. So that is not a normal place for a human to exist. And
yeah.
I unraveled emotionally very quickly, as did everybody on the ocean. And you realize very, very quickly and very profoundly that the connection between you and other human beings is actually what all that matters in the world.
Mm.
The money, the status, all those games you're playing, they don't matter. They don't matter at all, Andy. What matters is loving people, being loved by people and accepting that love. And that was something that, again, I learned that I'm not very good at accepting love from others.
Yeah.
You know, rough, tough marine, I'll go do this, I'll go do that. But actually finding the softer mic, the real mic underneath, and accepting that love from people was probably the biggest lesson. And that's
it's
the one
interesting about that, Mike, just interrupt real quick, but you came to that one fairly early, and I think it just maybe speaks to the power of it, because it was about 4 or 5 days in when this human connection thing hit, and it not just hit you, but it's like a common thing that hits all rowers out there at some level, especially solo rowers. You know, I would have thought that would have been something that would have evolved to near the end. You know, that's when you start feeling it, but I was surprised and encouraged, quite honestly, that if 4 or 5 days and you don't have that human connection, that's how powerful that is. It's not something that just sneaks up on you after 30 days, 40 days, right?
No, I mean, I said to my family, I'd call them like twice a week, because, you know, I didn't know what I was talking about. And I was saying, well, look, I want to experience the solitude. No, I called them twice a day, every day. And I cried and wailed down the phone twice a day, every day. And, you know, you need that. You need people to hear you. You need to hear people who love you talking back. One of the other lessons, which was a big one for me, was, you know, don't look past the next wave. I think far too many of us, when we set goals, look far too into the distance. And we're chasing the outcome. And actually, what's really important is doing what you can do today.
Yeah.
So what can I do this minute? What can I do this hour, this week, to move me one step closer to my goals rather than being focused on the outcome? And I made a big mistake about a week out when I tried to predict how long it would take me to get to Antigua.
Yeah.
Firstly, the mistake was that I thought my brain would work. And after 40 days of sleep deprivation, I literally couldn't divide 24 by 6. I couldn't do it. My whole cognition had gone. It gave me a little glimpse, actually, to what it might be like, you know, joking aside, what it might be like, you know, to suffer from dementia, you know, or your mind does start to go. It was a scary thing. And I tried to predict, and I was looking too far into the future. And then Mother Nature gave me a big slap around the face again and changed the wind direction, changed the waves, changed the current. And
oh, that would have been disheartening.
Yeah. Oh, it killed me, man. It broke me. But it made me go back to what's important.
Yeah.
The next wave, the one after that. What can I do right now? What can I do today? What can I do tomorrow? Not a week's time, 2 weeks' time. So I think that's a great lesson for anybody following any goal. Don't get too carried away with the distance and the outcome. Do the important stuff right now.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. I love that. Especially if you can't see past the next wave. I mean, you're in water. I wouldn't be able to see past the crest. So that's incredible. We'll get to some more of the lessons. One of the things that surprised me when you got off the boat, and I was watching you live on YouTube, I was assuming that much physical energy and activity, you would be like super buff. Like, this guy's going to be ripped coming out rowing that. But it took more out of you. And it's like, explain what happened physically, because I didn't understand that. You were fairly weak and was, you know, in a tough spot physically.
Yeah, I mean, it's worthwhile saying that I'd eaten all of my snack rations. I was eating anywhere between 5,000, 6,000 calories a day. I still lost 7 kilos in 5 weeks. I would have lost more if it had taken me longer. I was just rowing myself to death, basically.
Yeah.
And I was rowing between 14 and 17 hours a day with very little breaks in between and trying to snatch some sleep on a night, but that didn't really work. Mm. The reason for that was, again, as a solo rower, things went wrong when I wasn't on the oars, because boat speed drops, you have less control over the elements. And so I was scared and anxious and stressed around not rowing. And I remember being on the phone to my weather router or my wife, and I'd be staring at the oars, feeling guilty I wasn't rowing. And this was my 15 minutes off. And I'd rowed nonstop for 5 hours. I still felt guilty for not rowing the oars. And so that was what took it out of me. The ocean breaks you down. It does not build you up. You know, it breaks you down. And that resilience, that physical resilience then is in the preparation, because even though I was broken, I could still stand up. I could still put my arms over my head. I could still hold my wife and kids.
Yeah.
And
but you were under a lot of effort to do that. That was not as easy as it probably looked from the camera watching.
Well, anyone who sees it on YouTube will see me staggering around like I've had far too much to drink. I mean, it's just so unnatural, right? Like that, I didn't stand up for 46 days. Like, I didn't stand up.
Or eat, right? I didn't have any
hot meals, really, like rarely, occasionally as a treat. Just brutal, man. But I mean, and that's not to say that's the only way to do it. I think this is something I want to get across to anyone considering doing something like this. That was the authentic way that I row an ocean. And 46 days, 6,010 minutes was my ocean. That's the perfect time for me. You may do it different. There's still 3 people in the ocean doing it their way. It's the right way for you. So you don't need to get off as broken as I was, but then I'm the fastest person to do it. So it's like, what do you want? You know, for me, I wanted no regrets. That was the big thing I kept saying to myself on every day. No regrets today. No regrets today. And that meant, you don't sunbathe for an hour, you're rowing again.
You're rowing
again. No regrets. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that gets you to one of your other lessons, right? About rowing your old ocean.
Yeah. It's gotta be authentic, right? And too many people again compare themselves to others. What society expects of them. And I think we need to be brave enough to be able to just be ourselves. You know, I've been this morning doing some breath work in a room full of people. I don't know if you've ever done transformational breath work, Andy, but it's powerful stuff. It's warrior work. You're in tears. You're in some kind of semi-hallucinated trance. That, for me, is me just expressing being me for that hour. And I'm sure if some of my mates from the Marines saw me doing that, they'd be laughing their heads off. But, you know, I'm not bothered, because it's just me. And the sooner we stop worrying about what everyone else thinks and just get on with our own lives and live it the way we want to live it, that's when you find true freedom, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've heard a lot about the breath work. I haven't done it yet. I've read a lot about it. And I need to try it, you know? Because I hear it's just transformational.
I think we carry a lot of trauma around. One of the reasons I did it was that I wanted to offload some trauma that I'd been carrying around from my childhood before I went on the ocean, because it was going to come and find me there. And it found me. It came to find me.
Yeah.
But I think it's a process. For me, it's about just being Mike. I think we put this suit of armor on, we put this shield, this mask on for others all the time. Certainly I did it for over 20 years as a commando and running covert agents around the world or whatever. You have to present to be a certain type of person. Mm. And underneath, I'm just a big softy, right? So like to get that out there now and just be proud of that. And certainly that's my next to try and help, particularly men, accept that vulnerability is real strength.
Yeah. Well, you know, I watched you kind of go through that journey on the ocean and what you're talking about, and even before, and it seems like and correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I sense a new passion in you to perhaps speak to young men.
Yeah, well, men in general, but actually my passion, mate, is middle-aged men, because the statistics are quite clear. You know, the sweet spot for men killing themselves is between the age of 50 and 54, and it's the midlife transition. It's where we're leaving that first half of life, which tends to be striving and financial mating and corporate success, into the next half of life, which tends to be, if we do it right, I believe, more moral and fulfillment and giving to others and seeing the world in a slightly different way. And I think a lot of men can't make that transition very well. They don't, because we're not good at opening up. We're not good at being vulnerable. We're not good at accepting that we're shameful about certain things, because we present them as weak. And when a man's viewed as weak, then they're not successful and they feel shit. It's this vicious circle that a lot of men are in. And yeah, my passion now is to try and use my experiences to help men between the age of 35 and 55 live the next 45 years better than the first, because I think we can do that.
Oh, I think that's great. And the clarity on how you're going to pursue that came on the ocean? I mean, is that where that... Yeah.
Yeah, it's a connection thing. I mean, look, yeah. I mean, this is people have been talking about this for a long, long time, but it's only until you experience it yourself, mm-hmm. and you long for that connection, because you know you need it as a human. It's not in here. It's right. It's somewhere within your spirit, your physical being. Mm-hmm. And I think men don't connect well with other right. men, or yeah. women, to be fair. Yeah. And I think we need to give men permission to show some weakness for a change. And say, what? I'm struggling here, man.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to do. Can someone please help me? Because the more men do that, and let's face it, mate, you know, better men make better husbands, better fathers, better uncles, better leaders. It's all society benefits. But I think we've just created a society where men, and young men as well, feel they need to be a certain way. They don't, just need to be themselves.
Yeah, and really a lot of men don't know how to be in the world, you know? There's just so many signals, and they get the signal from the noise that really matters. And I think 55 might be a little, I think if you stretch that out to 58, you'd still be okay on that message. I know I was 58, stepping off of the corporate treadmill and trying something completely different, and it was terrifying. It was terrifying.
Well, how was that for you, man? Tell me about that.
It was terrifying. I mean, you're going from a high pressure every week scheduled for weeks out. You know what the grind is. Retail's a tough business. And then to just go from that to zero. And, you know, for a year, it was just really difficult to do that. And what happens, I kind of look at it as a watery lake analogy. If you spend that many years traveling as fast as you can from A to B across the water, and that water's choppy, you know, and then you stop, all of a sudden, you know, you're looking down and wondering what's down there, right? I mean, you can see to the bottom for the first time in probably 15, 20 years or more. And you never really look down and do that because the water's too choppy, right? You're just going so fast, you don't have to look. But when you slow it down and you stop and you look deep, and you start to wonder, you know, what have I built in my life underneath there that's in that water that I've never took the time to do? And I would say it took me a year of deep reflective thinking in that, but I could never have done it in the grind I was in to go find those stories, those challenges, the things that weren't dealt with that you just keep powering through and, you know, you do. And so I think many men at my age too, at 58, it just turned 60, but have gone through that experience when they step out of that corporate job for the first time and realize they haven't been looking deep when that water gets still enough that you can actually see deep because it's always so murky.
I love that analogy.
I'm with you 100%. So,
well, we're going to make it happen, man. I mean, I've committed personally to getting 100 men in the field this year. That's the start. That's the launch of the next 45. If we can get 100 guys in the field and we can have an impact on them over a couple of days, I think we'll build a movement. And let's see where it goes, man.
I'd love to be a part of that and help you with that in any way I can. I mean, especially if you figure it out in the UK and can come to the US and do that. But that is not unique to the UK. That 100%. Challenge is wide over here.
This is a global issue, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So let's do it. And I think going back to the row a little bit, I think that's one of the greatest things about it is it gives you a chance to, because you're only thinking about yourself in that moment, you get to see the world in a slightly different place. You know, you stepped off the treadmill at 58 yeah. and you got to see through that clear water. An ocean row gives you that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to work every morning. I'm not sorting my kids out before school. I don't have to deal with whatever my family wants me to do. All I've got to do is row this boat. And
yeah.
So it gives you time to start to think. And I think that's where you start to realize, you know, what's really important in life. And if we can help people do that, if we can help them see to the bottom, Andy, I love that analogy, then yeah, let's do it.
I figured you were going through that because I just knew what it was like for me to get that alone time for a year or so to think and work through and say, you know, who am I? What am I about? Am I listening to voices? Or am I listening to what was really down here, right? And that had to happen to you because your mind, when it gets really free and really, you know, all of those pressures go away, things start to come to your head that you probably hadn't thought about in years, I would assume. I mean, you got to choose to deal with it, right? You can't run from it. There's nowhere to go.
No, you're on the boat, so you know there's nowhere to hide. There's a clarity to things. There's a clarity yeah. to life, I think. You know, people, and it wasn't because, you know, I was near the end of life, but you do hear people say that, don't you? When pushed up against the wall and they're about to meet the maker, life becomes quite clear.
Yeah.
I think, you know, perhaps it's the same, but in a slightly less, you know, intense way. I think an ocean row gives you, or any big expedition alone, I think it would have been different, you know. Had he done it in a pair, with someone else to bounce ideas off of, I think it would have been very, very different. I don't think I'd have got the same
clarity.
No, but on my own, absolutely, the world presenting itself in a way. I mean, even this, Andy, like even the connection to nature and our environment, like feel. Yeah. I could feel the boat. There was one time the boat felt off.
Yeah.
And that's how in tune I was with everything. The boat felt off. Like, what is it? What is it? Turned out it was just a piece of seaweed this big on my dagger board. That was all it was. I had a look under the boat. I was like, there it is. Took it off. It felt good again. So you start to become really in tune with your environment. And again, that's just, it's magical, man.
It's magical. You know what's really, you're putting a real life experience to what I had read about, like these Polynesian islands where these guys would get in these canoes and navigate and find their way where there was no navigational instruments, but they felt the water, the ocean. I mean, it sounds like that you can relate to that. Like, yes, that can happen.
Yeah, I mean, like I didn't use a watch. You know, my day was governed by sunrise and sunset, and that changed the further west I went. But you know, I lived by the environment. I lived by nature, and again, the simplicity of that. It just means you don't need most of the things you think you need. You don't need them.
Yeah.
And this is not to say, you know what, you used to go live in a tent or in the woods and blah, blah, blah. But it's about having that clarity on what matters most, right? Like, what's the most important thing here? So when I get a choice between a business meeting over there or going to see my children play sport over there, I choose the children every time. Now, you know, like most of us, mate, we've made the other decision when we're younger. Because you're not sure, you're not clear, you're not looking at the bottom right now.
Right.
And so you're like, I need to go away to work, I need to go away to work. No, you go watch your kids play sport.
One of the other things that you had to compromise a lot is sleep. And I read a lot about sleep, the importance of sleep for good physical performance, getting a good eight hours sleep. You were deprived of that the whole time, right? I mean, so how has the lack of sleep affected you? Or have you now adapted that you only need 4 hours sleep and that's all you care about? I mean, is that changed? Or tell me about the sleep side. Because I understand the breathing bit, but the sleep, I'm not sure how that worked for you.
Oh, mate, I mean, look, this is one of the most important things as well. Like, I spoke to a sleep doctor before I left because I wanted to cover that piece off. I had three potential rowing routines that I was going to go do, and each one had a minimum of 4.5 hours sleep a night because he said, you can't get less than that. If you get less than that with what you're doing, you won't be able to function. I didn't know any of those routines. The first day I rode for 9 hours straight, then rode 1 hour on, 30 minutes off, all through the night, did it again and again and again. That's why I crashed on day six. sleep was the number one factor for me feeling okay or feeling absolutely awful. Not just physically, but like I say, mentally, I couldn't do simple arithmetic. Emotionally, broken. Rowing tears streaming down my face all day for no reason. Just the lack of sleep.
So how do you think sleep affects these people that say they only get 4 hours sleep, high-performing corporate execs going, I just have a hard time with that. It's like, that can't be good for you.
Well, there's sleep quantity and sleep quality. There's two different things here. Sleep quantity, you might get 4 hours a night. You might get 8 hours a night. You might get 12. It's the quality that counts. And so you must get, you know, your right amount of REM sleep, shortwave sleep to actually recover properly.
Okay.
I mean, I track it. I wear a Whoop, you know, and
yeah.
I notice that my nervous system has taken an absolute battering. And I think that's because of the lack of sleep. So my heart rate variability is really quite low at the moment. And that's not just the exertion on the oars. That is, I think, two things. The lack of sleep and no recovery for 46 days. And a constant omnipresent feeling of anxiety and stress.
Yeah.
That fight or flight sympathetic nervous system being dominant. And sleep nourishes the brain. Like REM sleep actually nourishes us. And if you don't get it, you can't process. And you just fall to pieces. And I fell to pieces, man. You know, and everyone will. You can't fight that.
You can't. That's a common.
You can't prepare for it. You can't fight it. We're all going to get done by sleep.
Mike, a little different subject. How does this affect your family? Sarah, the boys, did they go through any transformation or that you're willing to share, you know, has affected them in any kind of significant way?
I can't really say much for the boys. They're 12 and 13 now. You don't get a lot out of them. I'm hopeful.
Typical boys.
I'm hopeful in the future that they will reflect on this and be proud of it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure at the moment 100%. They just think I'm the embarrassing dad who the teachers keep talking about because it's in the paper, but I'm hopeful they're going to be proud of it. My wife, I mean, look, you know Sarah, she worked for you. I fell in love with her all over again on the ocean to a whole new level because, look, I went away and rode an ocean. That's difficult in itself. She stayed back here with two children, full-time, high-level corporate job, four cats, a dog. And when I rang up twice a day every day screaming and crying down the phone, she never once, and this is a testament to who she is, because I couldn't do this, she never once said, you chose to do this, it's your fault, what about me? Never once. She just let me do it. And let me say, I mean, that's remarkable. And so I see her in a, I always knew she was amazing, I married her, right? But like, I see her.
But that's remarkable.
I see who she is more deeply now, and she's a very special person.
That's remarkable. And it's so important to have a spouse connection like that, that you can really count on each other through those kind of times. And so I'm so happy to hear that. And it is a remarkable epiphany and performance on her part to do that. I was worried about what that might be like because, you know, obviously those who would know Sarah, just you know, she just pushes through and gets things done and handles things as they come. So a tough cookie to do that. But even a tough cookie, this is tough. Right. And so to be that kind of person through that for you is a blessing on your part, for sure. I totally understand that. Well, Mike, what I got a couple of students. Well, I don't have students. I work with the University of Arkansas. They have students, of course, but they like to ask questions of guests that we get on at different times. And two of them are students, Abigail Davis and Alexis Hodney. And they had asked some questions that they'd love for me to ask you, if that's okay. You don't mind doing that. So from Abigail, she's asking, for so many, the thought of physical or mental pain can be very daunting and could form roadblocks in their plans. However, you mentioned that you were aware that you would battle with sleep, deprivation, salt sores, and other physical pain. How did you prepare yourself mentally to go into this challenge to get past the physical pain?
That's a good question. Well, when I talk about achieving any goal, I think the first thing you have to start with is the motivation, the why you're doing it. And that motivation needs to be deep. It needs to be intrinsic. I think where people fall foul here is, and they can't overcome pain and suffering more broadly, is when they have an extrinsic motivation and they're just doing it to please others. You know my story. I was raising money for the hospital that saved my son's life.
That's right.
So there was no amount of pain that's going to be worse than a parent holding the hand of a poorly baby on life support right now. So for me, in the darkest hours, those kind of feelings and those kind of thoughts were going to get me through it. Interestingly, though, motivation changed on the boat. It started off me being motivated by raising money for charity.
Yeah.
But actually, again, coming back to human connection, the one thing I thought about every day, all day, was getting to Antigua to see my family again. That was it.
Yeah.
And so I was telling myself stories all the time, loads of positive self-talk, this extra hours for you, that Merry Christmas, I'm going to roll another 3 hours for you today for my family. Like, and the last 48 hours, when all the boats went on parachute anchor, and the head safety officer said to me, Mike, you need to go on parachute anchor and rest. I said, I ain't resting, mate, because my family are on that rock and I'm going to go see them. And I rode 22 hours straight to see them. And, you know, you need motivation. And with great motivation, you can do anything. Pain's not even a thing when you're talking about the people you love.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. I love that. She asked a second question. You'll like this. As an advocate for the American Heart Association on a national level, I've seen many different ways to fundraise for a cause. However, this one is very unique. Why did you choose to take this drastic approach compared to a more simple type of fundraising effort?
Well, because
I have to
simply,
laugh
because
the word drastic.
She's quite right. It was quite drastic. But I think that the reason, mate, is that I wanted to raise a tangible amount of money that could make a difference. And there's lots of people, and you know, all credit to them, going out and running the London Marathon,
yeah,
Leeds Half Marathon, whatever, and they might raise £300, £400, £5,000. Like, we've just raised over £180,000. It's over
£200,000. Okay, that's a big difference, yeah.
You're going to go and raise that on your own, in lockdown, by the way, when no businesses, yeah, apart from your good self, want to part with money like that to support good causes. It better be something that people go, you're going to do what? You're going to row an ocean solo on your own? That's not even possible. Yeah. That gets people inspired.
Yeah.
And that's why I chose to do something big.
It did me, and it still has. So from Alexis Hodney, she all asked questions I've already asked you, like what was the hardest part of the journey? But the one that she's asking here, similarly, if there's one thing you wish you had known at the beginning of your career, what would it be? Because she asked previously, what did you wish you had known? My very first question about looking back 2 years ago. But her follow-on question to that is, what do you wish you would have known at the beginning of your career?
Well, I've reflected back on my career, and I talk about this when I speak. That's a great question. That's a deep question. I love that.
Yeah.
I think it's that what you're doing right now matters, because it all adds up. So I wouldn't change anything again, because I don't believe in regrets, but there's no way I'd be sat on a podcast talking to you, having become the fastest British person to do that race, had I not given everything in Afghanistan in 2002 for the Royal Marines. I wouldn't have got a job in the MOD running covert agents and gathering intelligence against terrorists. And had I not done that to the best of my ability, I probably wouldn't have had the confidence to start my own business in lockdown. So what I would say to anyone who's young and setting out on a journey is, again, don't look past the next wave.
Yeah.
The job you're doing right now, the course you're taking right now in Arkansas University, you give it 100% because it matters.
I that's one of my life mottos as well. And it's in this area, do your best and nothing's wasted. There is no such thing as a perfect circumstance, a perfect job, a perfect first, you know, career job or whatever, because it all could change. But do your very best. And pay attention to the people in your life, because your next job may come through a connection of an administrator assistant that you were kind to and talked to and paid attention to, had an uncle that was over here, and all of a sudden your life changed because you were paying attention to people. And I just feel like that's how life really unfolds. It's much more of a mosaic than a puzzle. And just take those pieces from the inside out and see where they go. And you're a living mosaic, man. I mean, you know, you would probably not looked at your career and lined up all those things that's happened to you with a perfect plan at 21, right? That's your life didn't work out that way.
No, but I have another thing that I say as well. It's on your point there, but that movement creates opportunity. When we're moving forward with a goal, with a purpose, we know where we want to be, we're being good to people, opportunities present themselves. And if you the only way you can guarantee to not have opportunities is when you're doing nothing. So get out there, create some movement, and guess what? It'll work out. Just be the best person you can be. Try your best. Be good to the people. Life will be exactly as you want it to be.
And pay attention for that dolphin that might show up, or that bird that might land, right? Because, you know, the universe, the creator could be looking after us and we not even know it. And so, yeah, I love it. Mike, so we've heard what's next. How can people get in touch with you if they want to follow you? And I know you're doing corporate events now, speaking engagements. You're probably going to be getting that book out at some point. But I know there are going to be people that are interested in your story and want to stay connected with you. How do they do that?
Yeah, so the best place is if you head to Instagram, MikeBates_official. On LinkedIn, Mike Bates. Facebook, Mike Bates. MikeBates.uk if you want to get any updates. I have just signed a book deal with a major publisher, global publisher. That book's coming out next year.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, loads of exciting things, but all built around the mission. Talk about purpose again, of helping people. And that's what this is. I just want to say to you, Andy, real quick, thank you for being there from the beginning and for supporting this campaign and for sharing my story. You know, the world needs more people like you, my friend. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's been a pleasure. We'll have links in the show notes to all the links Mike just mentioned. So please go check them out. Follow Mike. It's just an incredible journey, an incredible guy, incredible family. Thanks, Mike, for being a role model for all of us. I know I've been inspired on so many different levels, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. You've hit all the buckets for me. So thank you again, my friend.
Thanks for listening to the Big Quest podcast. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe and leave a comment. And if you want to share it, we're available on Apple, Spotify, Google, and anywhere you listen to audio. If you're leading change in your company and you want to know more about developing the mindset, methods, and motivation needed to deliver big outcomes, I'd love to talk with you. You can reach me at bigquest.com. Until next time, I'm Andy Murray, reminding you to think big and quest on.